It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I love how people keep inventing new sports, and Alaskans keep finding unique ways to do them. Today's show is an example. We're talking about stand-up paddleboarding and paddleboard yoga. A paddleboard is essentially a surfboard for calm water. But as you'll learn from my first interview, paddleboards are now being used in Alaskan rivers and in the ocean, even for voyages. And folks are doing yoga on paddleboards, too. For me, yoga is hard enough on a stable floor. We'll talk to a yoga instructor who is taking it to the water, adding a level of difficulty in a way of making sure your balance is perfect. Finally, at the end of the show, we'll hear a hair-raising story from our live Outdoor Explorer show from a few weeks ago. Well, my first guest today is an actual guru. He's a
teacher. I'm a teacher.
Carl Mittelstadt his business is called Alaska Paddleboard Guru, and he has been paddling these things around in the craziest places. And he also is down. You might see him on the ski slopes at Alyeska in the wintertime. So you pursue your recreation.
Well, it's like the back of my van says on the back door: water. It's just snow on vacation.
There you go.
Even snow deserves vacation. Problem is, it's taken vacation for 2 years now.
It's been taking a few too many vacations. Paddleboards are these things that, and I'm coming to this with complete ignorance.
Okay.
My deal here is that I'm learning along with the listeners.
Yeah.
But I've seen them, and they look like they wouldn't work. It looks like you'd stand on it and you'd flip over because it looks like a surfboard, and then you're paddling along with this long oar looking thing. So how does it work
with
exactly?
A paddle? Well, the way from what I've read, I'm sure this has been going on well before it was documented with the surf scene. I've seen video of Alaskans in the 30s standing up in canoes.
Okay.
And paddling through swamps. I've seen people in China
paddies. Absolutely, yeah.
Pushing through gondolas.
A little rafts and stuff.
In Italy. Uh-huh. So all this stuff's been going on. But the surf thing, from what I understand, is it started in the 50s when the surfers wanted to take pictures of the tourists because they're out there crashing.
Uh-huh.
So they'd take the longboards out and then take a camera and they could stand on it and take pictures. And they just started paddling these things around and figuring out, hey, the longer the board, if we make it wide, it's more stable. So they lengthen them. Average board's about 10'6".
Uh-huh.
And then they go all the way up to 14 for racing. And the width is, for a race board, 20 is tight. That's a rocking horse. You got to have balance. And average, a really good all-around board's about 30 inches. Is nice and stable wide.
So is it pretty easy to balance the first time you're
on it? It is just like a bicycle. Once you learn, you're dialed.
But it might take you a couple of tries.
Yeah, and if you pick a lake and a pond that's warm, it's not a shock.
just keep playing around. Yeah, you don't want to try turning an arm the first time.
I bought a board in 2012. I first paddleboarded in Oahu when my dad took me to a dental association meeting, and my mom didn't want to go, so he gave me the ticket, and I went and rented a paddleboard, and a big giant Samoan brings me out in the surf. I'm all, how's this guy going to teach me anything? He's twice my size.
Right.
He knows how to read the water. I didn't know. This guy spends no effort whatsoever to do anything because he knows the water.
Huh.
So he got me out there and he got me standing. I stood up for about at least half a football field on a wave. And it just blew my mind. And I'm thinking, I'm just awesome. Yeah. And I'm screaming and yelling. And I look over and there's a little 5-year-old standing on the tip of his dad's board going, "What's up?" with this little Hawaiian hand signal. I'm like, okay, I'm not that good. So it took 8 years for me to find a board here in Anchorage at a local shop. So in 2012, I bought my first board.
Huh.
And I'm going from snowboarding. I started snowboarding back in 82. So I was laughed at for 5 years on that one. So now here I am in the front end of the paddleboard scene again in Alaska.
So is there any similarity between snowboarding?
Yes, there is. If you want to really aggressively paddle a board, standing sideways on the center line, surf stance, is a very aggressive way of paddling a board.
Makes sense,
just really gives you a dig. And that's how surfers start. So the stance is in moving water and on a wave is the same.
Huh.
But pretty much downhillers, it's your stance. You're facing where you're going. Both feet are facing forward and it's about shoulder width on your feet. So it's a lot like skiing too.
Wow.
Other than two poles, you just get one paddle.
Well, you see people doing a lot in calm water, just paddling around.
Yeah, that's what we just call it, the zen.
Yeah.
Early morning glass, late evening glass, when the winds die down, it's heaven on earth.
It looks like fun, yeah.
It's free. So you know a little of my history. I grew up in Anchorage, and back in the Campbell Creek Classic days, if anybody remembers those.
I remember that well,
We're going back in the 70s here, folks. And
that was where people would float down the Campbell Creek in anything.
Anything. If it was a cardboard box, go for it.
It was really fun. I don't know if they decided the water was too polluted to do it anymore.
Yeah, I don't. I'm kind of bummed that that doesn't happen. But anyway, I was following. I was the little brother tagging along on inner tubes.
Yep.
And my brother and his friend left me behind, and I got stuck in a sweeper.
Oh, my God.
And some guy... The only time my brother ever has said, I believe in angels, that guy was an angel. Some dude walked out of the trees in the middle of nowhere, grabbed me by the scruff of the neck right when I was about to take a lung full of water, and he pulled me out of that log jam and set me on the shore, didn't say a thing to me, and walked back into the woods.
Wow.
So I was deathly afraid of water pretty much my whole life because that was a bad experience.
You almost died, yeah.
And then I did a couple trips. Had a friend who ran the 6 Mile River, which is insane. I knew the teacher that died in that. So I was deathly afraid of that, but I really trusted this person. So I went down 6 Mile with them, and out of 4 boats, we were the only ones who didn't flip, and we high-sided twice.
Huh.
So I was, wow, okay, you can survive this stuff. So that kind of got me interested, and then I tried it, and oh, was I hooked, because water, it's everywhere in summer.
Yeah.
So, and the possibilities are endless.
So, what is the versatility of this? I mean, what kinds of situations can you use a stand-up paddleboard?
Okay, now there's pretty much 5 different types of SUP boards. You've got your all-around basic SUP, which is kind of stems from the surfboard, the large long boards. And then you've got race, which are displacement hulls. So we'd call a regular surfboard is a planing hull.
Right.
And then you've got a displacement hull.
Which means that it sort of skims across the top
exactly.
of the water.
Think of it planing. And then displacement is like a kayak shaped with a point and a nice V down the middle. So it tracks straight and it gets up on step like a boat does.
Huh.
And it just, per stroke, you're getting another 3 foot out of your glide. On those longer race boards. Then you've got yoga specific boards now. And then river.
What is yoga?
They're just really soft top flat boards, really stable, super wide, 33 to 36 inches.
Really easy to use?
Yeah. Well, so they can do their crazy balancing stuff without getting wet.
So you're saying they do yoga on the board?
Yes. That's the new thing for the girls, which is actually challenging. So I'm going to get into it. I'm too old to not be stretching, so.
All right. Well, I think we're going to be having somebody in the second half, Paula Cerda, APU Paddleboard Yoga Workshop. So
nice.
We'll hear all about that.
Cool. Yeah, she'll explain all that, and I'm just getting into that stuff.
Uh-huh.
As you get older, you got to admit, you got to take care of the body.
there you go.
So you're
going through all the different types.
Yep. And then, so the river, pretty much I've found... are inflatables. They're the best because they're built more like a raft. They have less of a... Think of a pair of dull skis with no edges. Just take a grinder and take the edges off. You're never going to hook an edge. That's what a rounded inflatable does for you.
Mm.
So you can go into a cross current where two creeks meet. You could even lean into that cross current you're coming into and you're not going to hook it and get tossed. But on a rigid board, one wrong move and you're swimming.
Huh.
They just hook an edge like a sharp ski.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you actually go down pretty rapid rivers on a stand-up paddleboard.
I've now done... All right, well, we got to talk about the distinguishing of classes on water.
Yeah.
Because a kayak and a boater is sitting. I'm trying to stand. So I personally think class 3 is class 4 for a paddleboard.
Yeah, because it's almost like you're skiing down the river.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy, really.
And your saving grace is to drop to your knee. My favorite part about it is when you get scared, you instantly go to the praying position.
There you go.
You're like, help me. So if you're going to do rivers, you definitely want an inflatable is how I'm looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cheap ones and there's very expensive ones.
So tell me about some of the rivers you've done.
I have done every creek I can find in Turnagain Arm.
Oh, wow.
Anything that the tide influx goes into, I've gone up. So 20 Mile Placer, Portage, and all these little tributaries. You can kind of go inside the tubes under the road and mess around at high tide. And all the swamps I've explored and Kenai River and... I'm shooting for before I turn 50. I'm 47 this year. I want to do 1,000 miles on the Yukon.
That sounds
buggy.
That sounds amazing. Also, I think I'd get tired of standing for that long.
Ah, if you're ADHD like me, it's all good. You got something to look at. All the wildlife and beauty.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's better than being in a car.
So you mentioned going through marshes or swamps. I hadn't thought about that, but that's a good idea, isn't it? Because you've got nothing. There's really nothing to hold you back.
And another tool in your quiver when it comes to paddleboards is your fin size. Here I am sitting down. I knew nothing a few years back. 2012 was my first board, the coldest summer on record. And I buy a board and go out and turning an arm and learn. I learned quick. Fins, they've been going on since the 60s. These guys have got it dialed. Here I am trying to, I don't want the depth on my fin. I don't want 9 inches of fin hanging out under there. I'm in creeks that are shallow. And then it hits and you get supermanned off the front of your board. It's no fun. Right. Oh, so I'll drop the size. And I'm all trying to design a fin like a grayling fin because they're longer. Yeah. You lose the height, but you got width.
Right.
So I'm all designing this stuff. Then I go online and look, and somebody thought about that in 1965. So I just went and bought a different, smaller keel fin, which is a 4.5, which is an awesome fin for Alaska.
So when you say you bought a fin, you bought a board with the fin?
Fins are sold separately.
Oh, you can actually change them out.
So imagine if you could change the edges on your skis.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of what fins do. And some are a single fin setup and some have tri, and their side bites are the little teeny guys. And they pretty much think of those as a surfboard edge enhancement. They just help hold on a wave. And what's really funny is on these 11 footers, these 12 footers, when you're surfing a wave, you're only using the last 2 foot of the board.
Right.
All that stuff in front of you doesn't matter. I mean, you can just sit there on the back 2 foot and be happy all day.
Yeah, yeah.
Just keep that nose up.
Are you into just regular old wave surfing?
No, not really. I haven't done that. I want to learn where it's warm, where I can do it naked. Sorry, I don't need to be in rubber for learning that. I have been out. There's a person, Pete, out in Turning an Arm who taught me, and it's fun. But it's kind of, I came from a crowded ski area. I'm out there for my
peace,
health of mind. So to get away from everything. Uh-huh. So the crowded party waves are a little bit, I mean, you can hit the mornings.
There'll be a lot of people on those boards.
Sometimes there are, yes. I've seen up to 20 people on a wave.
I haven't even heard people like complaining about like rudeness and people like pushing each other out of the way.
A few years ago, there was a YouTube video of a kid out there screaming, "This is my wave, beep, 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 get off my wave." So yeah, you'll meet those kind.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about a totally new topic with a really fun guy, Carl Mittelstadt, whose business is called the Alaska Paddleboard Guru, business and identity, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
So how much do these things cost to just get yourself set up in a paddleboard? And I guess the first question would be, is there somewhere you could rent one or borrow one and try it out?
Oh, yeah, of course. That's kind of why I started my business. I sat and researched this for 2 years before even getting involved in it. So I'm sitting there in Girdwood as it rains and it's dark and you don't want to go skiing. I just sat on the computer for a whole winter just looking up what's going on with paddleboarding in the world. And there's a lot of startups starting, you know, and I happened to stumble upon one that the guy took a kayak paddle and on one blade he put a sup handle. So now you've got a double-bladed paddle, but you can stand up with it.
Uh-huh.
So in an emergency situation, you can drop to your knees. You've got that double kayak paddle.
Yeah, yeah.
You're out of a bad situation, easy, and headwinds.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I'm like, this guy, I believe in him, and I gave him money for a startup. He's out of Colorado Springs, Hala Gear, and he remembered me when I started my company up a year later in 2014, and he sent me my first 5 boards for free. Now, cost.
So you're helping people out who want to try it the first time.
Yeah, I got into it because I see that it's just like skiing. If you could ride, I mean, there's so many kinds of skis now. If somebody offered me 5 or 6 pairs to ski in a day, I'd have a much better educated decision when I go to buy that pair of skis.
Very good point.
And that's what I want to offer with paddle boards is what I never got with snowboards. Mm-hmm. Is here's 15 different types. Check them out. Different brands, different companies.
Right.
See what you like.
Uh-huh.
And I've explored on all of them and tried all of them, so I have a good background knowledge in turning an arm using the tidal flow to travel on what these boards can and can't do.
Got ya. So we'll have your website up on our website at outdoorexplorer.org, and people can contact you and kind of check it out a little bit.
Gotcha. Well, it mainly came down to safety for me because of inflatables. If I take a Dixie cup and I fill it with rocks, a halfway. And then I take another Dixie cup and I fill it with feathers or styrofoam packing foam. And I put them in a bowl of water and I go, and blow on them. Which one's going to take off?
Right, the
lighter
one.
With no weight.
Yeah.
So I see these, I hate dropping names. I see these Costco boards for 400 bucks with no instruction whatsoever about what they're buying. And people are going to cross a lake early morning, no catabatic winds, nothing's happening active-wise in the environment, and they're going to get across a lake, and then a headwind's going to kick up. And I've found, and I have practiced a lot, I'm not a big guy, but I'm pretty stout when it comes to stamina.
Yeah.
And, wow, you can get schooled in just a 7 mile per hour constant wind on an inflatable.
Right.
So I have found that's something people need to be warned about.
So the
about.
Wind is going to catch that inflatable and push you backwards, and you're really not going to be able to go where you want to go.
Exactly. And
which could be a safety issue.
Big time. On Kenai Lake, someplace where it's 44 degree water.
Right.
Portage. Ooh, cold. Mm-hmm. So the coldest river I've been in is Placer, by the way.
Yeah, I bet.
Spencer Glacier, folks. You want to feel cold water that hurts? Yeah, fall in that.
So the rigid board is just a lot safer because of less.
It's
more stable.
Weight is your
less,
friend.
Yeah.
Now, it sucks to put on your car and it sucks to carry, but in headwinds, my Rotomold board, which is just a kayak plastic board, weighs 44 pounds. I mean, that's double what a regular board twice its length would cost. I mean, would weigh if you bought a $2,000 nice one.
Right.
But I found in headwinds out in Portage where I practice against the winds because they're always blowing off the glaciers, so you can work into them and then get blown back to Biggage Bogs area, you know?
Uh-huh.
So that's
sure.
kind of a safe way to work with it. I can penetrate some pretty good winds with the heavier the board is.
And then you can also, as you're saying, get down, because if you're standing up vertical, then you're really catching the wind.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Think about you as a sail,
right.
Which works just as good with a tailwind.
Interesting.
It's like, oh, I don't even have to paddle. It just pushes me where I want to go. But remember, you got to go back.
Right. Well, what about waves? I mean, it would seem to me that if you were going towards a wave on a 10 or 12 foot board, maybe not too big a deal as long as the wave's not too big. But if the wave's at your side, that might be a little
see,
bit harder.
Yeah, see, that Skelak Lake has taught me how to literally hold onto the board with both edges of my feet while kneeling and taking impacts from the side for a mile. I mean, you can deal with it, but it ain't fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun because what problem is you can't switch sides on the paddling. You've got to stay on the opposite side of your wind or you're just going to go where it wants you to go.
Right.
So that'll wear out your right shoulder real quick, like.
Well, I've even seen people out in Kachemak Bay doing this, and that obviously very cold water and a potential for some pretty big waves out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Perry Salmonson out of Whittier, a sound paddler, great guy.
Yeah.
He's one of the reasons I started my company. It was because he was doing it, and I was like, wow, well, Perry's doing it. I'm going to try.
Right.
And that's a place where the weather can spank you.
For sure. So what do you wear when you're doing this?
Okay, I don't like dry suits. I'm sorry. There's two kinds of people on Earth. Dry suit wearers, which are kind of like, whatever, I'm not going to go there. I'll make some of them. But, and then there's wetsuits. And I like wetsuits because I'm active. If I get cold, I can layer up. I bring it change. They're not that expensive. So have a couple different changes of wetsuits for you. Can have a Johnny is pretty much what I'm wearing. Like I just did the Kenai. Took 4 days to do that 85 miles and pretty much wore a Johnny the whole time because I'm working, it was 80 degrees every day at 2 p.m. So you can just pull over to the beach and thaw out. The mornings were cold. We had frost on us two mornings.
Wow.
So it was getting down to 33, 32.
So you started did the entire river, huh?
From Kenai Lake, Cooper Landing, boom, right there all the way. First stop was Jim's Landing, just to stop and scope out the canyons.
Yeah.
It looked okay. It was really high water. And I'm like, well, that looks okay. And then we went around the corner from what you can't see, and we got schooled. So high water on that upper river, the canyon area, good luck with that one, folks.
What do you do when you, like, you just fell off the board?
No, I never fell.
Oh, really?
I did not fall once, but I have spent 4 years now, about 200 hours, in Turniganar messing with horrible winds and waves, so... my skill of now, my friend who I drug along with me, Spencer, I'm sorry, I love you, man. he got clean. We'll just say he was really clean by the end of that. By the time we reached Skelak Lake, we were clean. And he sacrificed his sunglasses. So Skelak led us halfway across with glass. Thank you, Skelak.
So people must give you crazy looks when they see you paddling by on the Kenai River.
Oh, yeah. Even turning an arm. I mean, I'll just be out there by myself because I grew up running from the tides at Bird Point. We used to go out, It's changed a lot over the years. The mud out there, 800 feet deep, it changes. It's just like any river valley. It just changes. And back in the 90s when we played out there a lot, the tide would come in and do a giant 2-mile circle and fill an area. Mm-hmm. And then it would move ahead and do another giant circle. And we had it all figured out where we could be running 2 miles offshore out there with these circles going on. As long as you made it back to shore by the time that fourth circle happened, you get back. Now the tides come and I'm like, oh, hey, I know what the Indians were doing back in the day. They were hopping in their canoe and just going with the flow. And that's what I've been doing. So I can put in at Girdwood, go all the way up Turnagain Arm if there's no headwinds, go up 20 mile a couple miles, relax for the 2 hours that it's slack tide, and then float back sometimes a 15-hour day on the board.
Wow, that sounds really sweet.
It's incredible. To see beluga, that's another thing that I have a problem with is harassing the whales. Some people have been kind of, the young ones don't know any better. So they're the gray ones. They look like this tabletop.
Right.
You know they're young when they're gray.
Right.
They turn white as they get older. And the young ones will come and check you out, but their parents will freak out. I swear the parents know they're a hunted creature by the Eskimos.
Yeah, probably do.
And I just don't want them getting domesticated around people because that just means it's going to be that much easier for people to harpoon them. So, and it's funny because a year ago I got in a little discussion on social media about some friends doing that with the whales. And, well, your logo is you on the back of a whale. I'm like, well, it's because I respect them. I love them. I want to be there to just enjoy them. And they're smart. They've got sonar. They're just like a dolphin. They sound that big forehead that a beluga has. They're sounding. They know where you are. I've tried to float into a pod just acting like a log without my paddle in the water laying down. They give you a 200-foot berth. They do not want to be anywhere near anything out there.
Yeah.
How they know you're there, it's because I can't even see my hand when I stick it
under
that.
That's
true,
yeah. They're navigating.
They're navigating with sonar. It's
all the
amazing,
time.
Yeah.
All the time,
and they'll go to the end of the arm, and where the water swirls right there in front of Placer, 20 Mile, and Portage, it'll just do this giant swirl. They'll just feeding frenzy on the hooligan.
Yeah.
So neat to watch.
Oh, that sounds so fun, and what a great way to see them, right? Because
you're
standing up, and you can actually see some distance.
And just stay on the edge, you know, and you can see them. They know where the deepest areas are, so they'll also show you where you're not going to hit fin.
Right. So have you had any mishaps or times when you got scared doing this?
Oh, yeah. Plenty. Placer. That's a scary river. The train. You can take the train out to Spencer Glacier.
Yeah, that is such a fun
and down
trip, isn't
it? It's an incredible. I rode that for Class 5 a few years back, and I was the first one to get stuck on a log jam. I'll take full credit for that.
Right.
But I learned self-rescue that way. That was kind of fun with six Americans who thought I was not a very good rower at that
so
moment.
So these were tourists.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Kids on cell phones. I'm like, can I take that away from your kid? So anyway, that I fell in, and within a matter of 1/1000, 2/1000, about 5 seconds, I lost complete feeling in both hands. And to get back up on your board in a moving creek that is like 33 degrees, I almost didn't make it back up on my deck. I got two fingers in the deck hold, which is a hole in the middle, and I used my other hand to pull myself up off the tail onto it.
Just because you're so damn cold.
Couldn't grab anything, could barely even hold my paddle after that.
Wow.
And that was in full suit.
Yeah.
I just didn't have gloves on, thinking I was a tough Alaskan.
So the place to learn this is going to be on a nice...
Non-glacier-fed lakes.
Nice warm lake on a nice warm day, and you're probably going to fall in a bunch of times the first day you try it.
I would... No, it depends on what board you're learning on.
Okay.
Most boards are stable. I mean, did you fall every time you rode a bike? You were just a little scared, but you got it.
Right.
It's amazing. The learning curve is amazing. I taught my 78-year-old father a few years ago how to paddleboard.
Cool.
So
and how do you get on? You just climb up out of the water, or do you start from shore?
If you fall self-rescue.
Or even starting out when you're going out, you just walk right on it from the shore?
Oh, yeah. That comes with time. You always put your board in the water fin first because it's the lowest part of your board. And then if you're in a river, you want your board facing upstream. So it's facing the current because a board always wants to track tail last because of the fin. So I've learned to put it on rivers, especially fast-flowing rivers, with the nose pointed up. Up the flow, and then you just soon push off, and then just turn down with one J stroke.
Cool.
So that's one trick that I found to not get knocked silly on the rocks.
Yeah, and you're teaching people.
Yes, I'm teaching people on lakes where it's safe.
Yeah, cool. Well, then, Carl Mittelstadt, thanks so much for being with us. And folks can get in touch with Carl through our website at outdoorexplorer.org and find his business, Alaska Paddleboard Guru, and you'll show him how to do it.
Totally mobile.
All right. Thanks so much. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking today about paddleboards. And the first half was all this crazy adventure and stuff you can do on rivers and in the ocean. And the second half, we're calming it down quite a bit. We're talking about something I didn't even know existed, which is paddleboard yoga. That's right, doing yoga on a paddleboard in the water, and not only in a swimming pool, but outdoors. And Paula Sevda is a instructor at APU, teaches yoga and water aerobics, and also paddleboard yoga. And Paula, I'm sure you knew a lot about yoga before you tried to do it on a paddleboard. What is the, it seems like it would be a degree of difficulty that would take your balance to like an extreme level, right? Is
definitely
that what it's all about?
Yes, it's definitely a lot of marrying that balance on that board with the mental balance. You're juggling both the physical and the mental, and then trying to connect those movements, the tiny adjustments to the breath, ultimately.
Uh-huh.
Coming back to center, both on the board and within yourself.
So if you're doing yoga on a mat in a gym and you do it wrong, your instructor might say you're sort of, oh, your not balance isn't quite right, or that move isn't quite right. But it seems to me that if you did it wrong on a paddleboard, you would end up in the water, right?
Sometimes that is how it ends. I think that every person has their own way of creating a pose and how they get to it. There's so many means to the one end. So on the board, you really do have to find your own sweet spot, is what we call it, on the board itself. And from there, you build from the bottom up, gain that confidence of either kneeling or a sitting position to come up on maybe the knees and then the feet. But you're right. If you shift your weight and the board starts moving under you, most people react in kind of a jerking motion, and then that could be where you fall in the water. But I think that falling is half the fun.
Okay. Probably the first person who does it breaks the ice.
Yes, definitely. There's always that that feeling of, I don't want to be that guy.
Like, yeah.
Don't be that guy. And I try to convey to the participants that we're not here as a competition. You know, we're
right.
not here competing against the person next to you or even yourself, which can be the toughest competition in yoga. We're here to relax. We're here because our bodies really like being near water and because these moves are challenging us in different ways, mostly bringing all of our attention to the core, to our center.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, it's okay, you know, have fun with it. Don't start frowning. Like, try to leave that out. Try not to create more stress than you had when you walked in here.
Yeah, yeah. So what is, I mean, this is by maybe a huge question, but what is the essence of yoga to you? I mean, what is yoga?
The essence of yoga to me is to bring together awareness in the body, awareness of the mind, and awareness of the spirit. I think that yoga is a wonderful practice that can help us tune into those three things. With exercise alone, we stress the body and the mind to create endurance and create muscular balance and strength. But to bring that awareness to the mind of that activity in the mind where we're not ever stopping, that brain activity doesn't stop even when we sleep. It keeps going to kind of quiet that chatter, using body movements and pairing the breath to those movements truly creates this very soothing activity. And for many of us, that's what we like. We like bringing all those three elements into harmony.
And it affects the rest of your life, too. It's not something you leave in the gym.
Absolutely. Through yoga and the teacher training that I finished recently, it's about carrying the yoga off the mat, carrying a yogic lifestyle away from your personal practice and seeing how that practice affects how you interact with people, how you value your life and what you've been given in life, how your gratitude begins to grow for the few things that you have and also for the things that you don't have, but you just begin to be more aware of how you're connected to all of these other people and all of these other systems and networks, and you start to see how you're important in a small way, but how it impacts so many other people, the ripples you create.
Yeah. And in terms of an outdoor athlete, what benefit can they get from yoga practice in their sort of athletic pursuits?
Yes, many benefits, actually. Through yoga, we have both a practice of movements and also breathing techniques, pranayama. And you create heat within your body by practicing different breaths and creating different intervals and also matching breaths, creating that awareness and lengthening your breath, so expanding your lungs more, truly growing from the inside out. By expanding that breath, you expand the amount of space that you have within that breath to kind of clear. And then you also grow the amount that you release by matching those two breaths. We call it samavritti, same breath, equal length breath. All of these techniques help you when you're an athlete outside. I commute by bike every day. Uh-huh. So I use that technique, the samavritti, to match the breath in with the exhale so that I don't find myself suddenly not in control of my breath and suddenly gasping and having to stop. It's a very nice fluid technique of connecting the movement with the breath and getting into this flow. Not zoning out. Right. That is not what you want. But
awareness, but calm awareness.
Absolutely. Yeah. Controlled awareness.
Well, and balance is super important in so many of our outdoor sports, particularly like skiing and skating and that sort of thing. And it seems to me like balance is almost one of the fundamental parts of yoga.
Absolutely. To stand on your own feet and then to challenge yourself to do it on one or on the other limbs, which we don't usually stand on, the hands, the head, that is a challenge.
That's when you're getting a little bit more advanced.
Absolutely. We can all get there. And it starts with modifying the poses however you may need to finally being able to say, I need these props and that's okay. Not feel wrong about it. Mm-hmm. To use what you have to get to where you want.
Yeah. So now you've moved this onto a paddleboard, which is like the last thing that I would actually think of doing. I mean, I have enough trouble standing on one foot. How did you personally find that the first time you did it? Was it easy or was it challenging?
It was definitely challenging, and it pushes you mentally. And sometimes out of that comfort zone because you want to be calm and you're enjoying, especially if you were practicing right before, which is what I was doing. I was practicing in the yoga room, you know, completely stable footing. And then we move into the pool area, which is nice and warm, 82 degree room and 82 degree water. You move in there and you feel good. You're still feeling great. But then you realize that you're kneeling on this board and being pushed off the edge. And then you're floating. You have no anchor.
Yeah.
It's just you and the board, and you're completely at the mercy of that water. If somebody else falls, you'll feel it.
Oh, wow.
And that is that connection, that we're not here competing against each other. We're all struggling. We all have our different struggles, but we find the way to balance ourselves, find that sweet spot, and eventually step off and stand with just our own strength. Push yourself away from that paddleboard to come to a standing position, which is a lot harder than when we do mountain in a yoga room in a studio. You simply stand and maybe you're more aware of your posture and you're engaging your leg muscles. But here, it's almost a tiny fear of standing.
Yeah.
And it's that mental check of standing is harder than it seems.
Yeah.
Especially under different circumstances.
And that really focused balance and not worrying about it probably, but being aware. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you do all the same kind of poses on the paddleboard that you would do just on a mat?
Yes, for the most part. We definitely want to make this as friendly and as approachable as possible for any person, regardless of their previous experience with yoga. We do say if you don't have much experience with yoga, take it easy, stay where you feel safe,
I would think you'd want to do like get some familiarity in a regular class before you went to
mm-hmm. That is the best way to approach paddleboard, I believe, just so you have an idea of what the poses look like,
mm-hmm.
and then you try to imitate that with a little bit more challenge, obviously. We do cover the same poses from a mountain, a downward dog, a child's pose. That's some of the favorites.
Uh-huh.
And we try more challenging ones, like the warrior poses, where you're definitely stepping one foot in front of the other, maybe 3 feet distance apart, bending that front knee, and eventually bringing those arms up, rising above you. Taking all of that attention and not doing the side-to-side reach,
yeah.
wiggling, that is truly challenging. But having that mental picture of, I've done that before, and I know what it looks like. So this is me, no mirror. This is just me being completely aware of my body. This is mm-hmm. the challenge here.
And the water is what's keeping you disciplined.
Yes. Yes, and the water takes you where it takes you. You might be floating off and the instructor's behind you at one point and you can't just turn around and look like you do in a studio. They can't just come over to you and adjust.
Uh-huh.
That's not available to them. But I think that's the other part. You kind of say, okay, I can't see. Maybe I'm not as comfortable right now. So I come back down to a child's pose and I paddle my way around and now I'm facing them and now I start over.
Mm-hmm.
You do have that control. You have the control to say, I'm going to take a quick adjustment here and come back down and start over.
So have you fallen off?
Yes.
So I would think that would be humbling, first of all.
Yes. Very
but humbling. Then you've got to sort of get your mind back around the fact that you're going to do it again. You're not going to fall off the second time.
Yes, that's the goal, to stay on longer, to mm-hmm. stay dry. But you also have that, okay, so I did this and this is what happened. You start creating that memory of, so maybe that wasn't the best way to react to that situation. And that's how you take it out to real life as well. You see the chain of events that leads to you falling off that board, and you retrace your steps and
which would be like maybe you're starting to lose balance, so you become more tense.
Exactly.
And then you lose your balance more, you start to wiggle. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then having that jerking motion of, oh, maybe if I quickly do this, I'll be fine. As you quickly make one adjustment, the water reacts
and
to
you
it.
Shoot the paddle board right under you. Yeah.
Exactly. Just like that.
That sounds pretty funny. Have you had any students who just couldn't get it?
You know, I don't think so. I think that each person realizes this is where I'm comfortable and this is my ability level or knowledge of yoga. And so I'm starting here and maybe I'll put myself out there.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'll stretch that one arm on top. Maybe not both, maybe one.
Uh-huh.
And eventually goal is both. But I think that people quickly realize where their limits are and how far they can push it without tensing up completely and then losing balance.
Uh-huh.
So it's really beautiful to see people out there and see them focus not on the team, the group of people, the group of strangers that are now in this swimming pool and trying not to fall. They start to center. And that is the goal, to bring that awareness back to yourself, to bring all of that energy that you're expending and focus it on yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's Outdoor Explorer. We are talking about paddleboarding today. And this whole exercise of doing yoga on the paddleboard, which is sounds so interesting and such a good way of sort of adding another level of discipline to this. And my guest today is Paula Cerda, who is an APU instructor. She's taught paddleboard yoga there done for the season, but next year, next school year, I'm sure they'll be starting. There's community classes and also classes for APU students, and she also teaches water aerobics. So, Paula, you got them in the pool. You're not outdoors yet. What's the next step?
The next step is realizing that you can take that out of the building. These paddle boards were meant to be outside.
Yeah.
And we are lucky enough to have inflatable boards so that all we do is, deflate, roll them up, and they have their whole backpack, pump, and PFD set up.
Oh, wow.
So it all fits into this nice little bag that you carry. It's a backpack, and you can take it with you. You can go out on a hike to a lake, and that's easy to carry. You can put them in the car and drive down to Goose Lake, or you can rent them at APU, walk down the trail, and make your way over to Goose Lake. That's a beautiful little walk.
Uh-huh.
You can anchor yourself for a little more stability if you don't want to float off too far, or if you're alone. If you're practicing alone, that's always just, safety.
Right.
Reasons that you do that
stay
for.
Stay near the shore.
Mm-hmm. And you also become just more aware of where you are. If you're floating near the edge of a lake or the pool, our main safety concerns are if you're balancing and you're standing, like think about that height that you're losing if you fall, mm-hmm. and where you're hitting, if you're falling in the water or if you're falling on the bank or on the gutter.
Right.
Those are the main things that we kind of express to people is take care of yourselves. Don't lose complete awareness while looking in. Definitely stay present.
Stay in what's around you. Mm-hmm. Well, water on Goose Lake, even on the warmest day of the year, is pretty chilly. And that would give you an added incentive not to fall off, I
yes,
think.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. You don't wear wetsuits or anything, though. You just...
You can.
Okay.
You can. It just depends on where you are and depends on your comfort level with that. Several people do just because, like you mentioned, the temperature in these waters is just a little colder, even in the summer. But I think it's just a beautiful alternative. It's low impact, obviously, and you're just practicing yoga outside, which not many people get to do. Even though we have like park yoga, we don't have anything out there. No classes are set up to go out to a lake. But Jewel Lake, Rabbit Lake are becoming very popular with the paddleboard community.
Uh-huh.
I think it's helping spread that word of you don't just have to stand and paddle and that's the only thing you do on a paddleboard.
Uh-huh.
You can sit and meditate. You can do your yoga practice. You can stretch. You can just lay there on the paddleboard after a day of paddling and come to your own center. It's a nice relaxation technique, I think.
Huh. So there's a whole community of people doing this.
Yes, yes. Most recently, I actually ran into a young woman hanging flyers at the sports center. And they have a small business here in Anchorage taking people out on hikes and bringing their paddle boards with them. They have, I believe, 10 boards, so it's limited space. But they're guiding you through this hike if you're not familiar with the place. And then they're instructing for you out there. So you have mm-hmm. somebody else watching out for you, and you have somebody helping you find those modifications to your poses so that you really reap all the benefits and have fun
yeah.
out there.
Do you just go out by yourself sometimes to do yoga on a paddleboard?
I have yet to. I try not to hoard the paddleboard because we have so few.
At the APU, right.
Yes. Yes, I believe we have 7 or 8. Usually, you go by pairs. So there's not really that many paddleboards available, but if you call ahead and kind of plan out, you're more than likely to find mm-hmm. at least 2 or 3 available. Like I said, I don't like to hoard them since I've had mm-hmm. them the entire school year in
yeah.
the sports center, and I really want people to get out there. But I'm looking to get out there soon, actually, this next week, and enjoy some of that sun.
Yeah, now it's getting a little warmer. It might be a little bit less terrifying to fall in. So, I don't know if APU rents these for the public.
We do.
Oh,
absolutely.
Cool.
They're part of our outdoor program's rental room.
Uh-huh.
We have all sorts of gear available for the public, from fat tire bikes to
oh, really?
Cross-country skis, tele skis, camping equipment, and now our paddle boards.
Okay. So at the Mosley Sports Center?
It's actually in the Atwood building.
Oh, it's in the Atwood building.
Yes, in the gym.
Okay.
In the Atwood Center gym
mm-hmm.
where we have our rock wall and all of our weight machines and whatnot, it is right next door.
Okay.
So you can walk in through the same building and then check out all the gear, all the boots, and all the other gear available, rafts, everything.
Neat. I didn't know that.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
That's a great resource. I think I'd want to have a class first, though. At least, I mean...
Right? Just for your own sake.
And well, I just feel not feeling totally ridiculous.
Well, it's definitely a nice activity, especially in the fall with, you know, maybe low snow levels here mm-hmm. in town. It's a really nice activity to partake in for your own health, your sinuses even, to come into an 82 degree room with nice salt water.
Lots of humidity.
Absolutely. It's great. People are able to relax more easily than even in a yoga studio where the room may be room temperature, but your muscles aren't quite relaxed to stretch to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
Having that water and the room temperature be so high allows the muscles to relax to a different extent and to maybe stretch a little bit longer or just release some more tension.
So I'm just curious, speaking as a person with poor balance and who's probably the worst yoga person in the world, if you, as a teacher, have worked with people who like seem very awkward or have bad balance or not very flexible, and how you kind of get them to be at a level where they can actually do yoga at some kind of reasonable ability?
I definitely try to emphasize that we're not there to impress anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We are literally being gentle with ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are taking care of ourselves and treating ourselves to this experience where our goal is to come in and release some tension, relax, breathe a little deeper, quiet the mind. And those are the exact same principles that we're taking into the pool or out on the lake. The body will react in different ways to these postures. Maybe your muscles are tighter than the person next to you, and that's okay. If you don't look like the instructor does in chair pose, that's okay.
Right.
You are where you are. And the point and hopefully the goal for you and for other participants is to stay present, to stay true to yourself, to not create any delusions, and to honestly move forward and be fully aware of the body through every
step. So that's
step.
Part of that mental and spiritual part you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Which is as true for somebody who's awkward as it is for someone who's graceful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Neat. Well, I'm so glad you came in. This is really interesting.
Thank you,
Paula.
Charles.
Paula Cerda is an instructor at APU. She teaches paddleboard yoga and also other yoga classes and community classes. And we'll have a link to their APU Outdoor Center where you can find out more about that. And stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Thanks to Paula and to Carl earlier for telling us about paddleboards. And now, as they say, for something completely different. A few weeks ago, we recorded an edition of Outdoor Explorer live on stage at the Taproot in Anchorage. We asked audience members up on the stage to tell their own stories, and one of my favorites was this one from George Menard. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're at the Taproot picking up some stories from folks who have done amazing things. They are sort of self-nominated, and George Menard is with me right now. In 1993, he was in Antarctica with Colonel Norman Vaughn. I don't know, a lot of Alaskans will remember Colonel Vaughn as a guy who ran the Iditarod when he was like 150 years old and did all these amazing expeditions and traveled over Antarctica. In 1993, that was quite a while ago. What you were traveling with Colonel Vaughn in Antarctica? What was the expedition?
Well, we all assembled in Punta Arenas, which is the southern tip of Chile, and that was the jumping off point for the expedition. And we were the advance party that was going down to establish camp, so he wasn't on the plane. There were three of us from the expedition and five of the air crew that were on that plane.
And what kind of plane was this?
DC-6, it's a four-engine.
It's a big plane.
It's a big plane.
Yeah, so you're flying to a camp?
To a place called Patriot Hills, and it was, there was another operation there called Adventure Network International, and they did adventure tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And the pilot and the plane had been flying for that operation in previous years, but with this Mount Vaughan expedition, he kind of broke off, started his own operation. Uh-huh. This was supposed to be the start of his own independent business down there, doing essentially the same thing.
So what was your first sign that something was wrong in this airplane?
When we got on the plane in Anchorage. we flew down commercially, and quite a number of the groups started in advance, and the DC-6 was being flown down by the pilot and his air crew. They flew in the Arctic in the summer and Antarctica,
Other way around, right?
Yeah, both summers, the Arctic and Austral summers. So, yeah, from there were problems with finance and organization, and, you know, books could be written about it, but basically, when we took off from Punta Arenas, it's an 8-hour flight in a DC-6, and there was a snow machine on board that they had put an aftermarket fuel tank on it, and it wasn't supposed to be full, but somebody put fuel in it, and it wasn't properly vented.
Uh-oh.
And so it spewed fuel out into the deck of the airplane.
While you're flying?
While we were flying, about 12 minutes after takeoff, we're gaining elevation, so start spewing out fuel. We mopped it up as best we could with rags and stuffed it in plastic bags, but the fumes were so bad they turned off the heating system, the cabin heat. But we were going to Antarctica, so we were prepared. No big deal to fly without heat. But a couple hours into the flight, when the fumes had subsided somewhat, they decided to try to turn on the cabin heat. And apparently there was a external valve that had frozen up. So the whole trip over, we had no heat. But as we were descending to land, we started passing through some cloud layers, and the windscreen iced up.
For the pilots?
Yeah, for the pilots.
Oh, great.
No cabin heat. They can't defrost it. So, and...
Were you aware of that at the time?
No. We were just dumb and happy in the back.
In the freezing cold, unheated airplane, right?
Right. We're descending. They do have a radar altimeter. And they also had a backup de-icing, which was alcohol, I guess, that they spray on the windshield.
Okay.
But there was a control for it, and it was covered up with a bunch of junk.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's, you know, frantically trying to get at this control. They're not paying attention to the radar altimeter, and we're settling towards the ice. And the only indication was at one point, we'd been throttled back and just settling, very quiet, and all of a sudden, they throttled up the engines, and they did it in three different steps. Went once, and this is interesting. What's going on? Throttled up again.
That's unusual, right.
Yeah, well, this doesn't seem quite right. And throttled up the third time, and it sounded to me like we're at full power. And I was in the rear of the aircraft. There were only five seats in it. The rest was taken up with barrels of fuel.
Oh, great.
Some 2 500-gallon fuel tanks that just used for fuel hauling. At any rate, after the third time they powered up, throttled up, it sounded like we were at full power. And then there was a very loud bang. And I was in the inside seat, so I couldn't see what was going on out there. But at first it's like, that was a pretty hard landing. And then it just, you know, your brain lags a little bit. And very shortly, we were aware that we were crashing, you know.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a hard landing. And pieces of the plane flew off in all directions. And that first bang we heard was the landing gear.
Breaking off?
Yeah, it broke off. It was packed snow, so the landing gear sunk in.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, at 160 knots,
yeah,
it puts a lot of stress on things.
Right. So did you just slide to a stop?
About a quarter of a mile, and it was kind of going at an angle, one side dug in more than the other, and it left a trail of debris. And all of a sudden, it was totally silent, and I looked down. I was fine. I had a death grip on the armrest.
I imagine, yeah.
I looked to my right. The guy that was at the door or at the window seat, he was fine.
Did you think about getting out of the plane at that point?
But it was deathly quiet. But then all of a sudden, from way up front, we heard, "Get out! Get out!" And something triggered in the old brain cavity and said, "Yeah, that's probably a good idea." So I went for the rear cargo door there, and at this point a TV or Hollywood production is
ruling
through my head, and I think, "Oh, it's going to be jammed. I won't be able to get out."
Yeah.
And no, it was held with a bungee, the handle.
You might have looked at that before when you got on, right?
Took off the bungee. No, the handle just, you know, smoothly opened and door opened.
And everybody was okay.
No. Jumped down about 4 or 6 feet onto the snow. And I saw these little tiny figures running around up towards the nose. And so I thought, well, I'll go out and check that out. And it had been quiet up to that point. But I met the pilot right by this gash in the fuselage, and all of a sudden we started hearing this screaming from inside.
Oh, wow.
And the veterinary for the expedition had been sitting in that window seat, and the propeller came off and slashed right down that side.
Ugh.
And he said later that he'd been asleep, he didn't even remember it, but he was very seriously injured.
Wow.
But he survived.
Well, I'm
and
glad to
he's,
hear it.
He's been a vet on the Iditarod several times up here. His name is Jerry Vennick.
Quite a story. You okay? It's going to be hard for anybody to top that one. All right, thank you. George Menard.
That was George Menard, recorded with me, Charles Walforth, live at the Taproot just a few weeks ago as we did our first edition of Outdoor Explorer in front of an audience. Well, that's all for today's show. Thanks for being with us. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our production assistant is Grace Bojean. My name is Charles Walforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.